You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Monday, everyone. This is Ethan Westerman filling in today for Matt Jones. And on today's show, Anthony Christensen will join me in the studio to help recap the Arkansas basketball team's 93-86 win over Texas Tech on Saturday. But first, a word from Kendall King.
Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back in. On that game on Saturday, at least through the TV, it just felt like a big-time game. Joined now by Anthony Christensen, who was at the game.
I was.
Was that the same feeling inside there as it was, you know, through the TV? It just, I don't know, it felt like it should be in March.
Yeah, no, it was very fun. It was an awesome game. I mean, the best game I think that we've covered this season, you know, just from a pure entertainment standpoint. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. It felt, you know, similar to, you know, like you said, a game that happens in March, because I guess it did happen in March, last March, but, you know, so, or I guess this past March, because we're still in 2025, but I digress. Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun. It was a great game, two really good teams, and Texas Tech was down, you know, a couple of guys. Luke Mamgoy is obviously, he's out injured right now, and I think he changes a lot of things for Texas Tech. Not to say he flips the result or anything, but you know, he adds another body because they only played six guys in that game. But no, it was a ton of fun to be there. It was a great game to watch, and yeah, two really good teams going at it. So yeah, no complaints from me to get to, you know, watch that.
Did it feel a little bit like, you know, just, you know, it's weird that, like you mentioned, in March we had just seen Calipari on the sidelines against Texas Tech, to see McCaslin, and that's how you say his last name, right? McCaslin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To see him and Calipari just back on the sidelines again, that short, like, amount of time from when we saw them in San Francisco, could you kind of feel that in the building, that was the underlying story of the game, was just kind of the rematch there?
Oh yeah, and that's what it was, like, branded as. It was like the Revo-Crute rematch or something like
I
that.
I saw that, and I was like, what is this?
I didn't even know what Revo-Crute was before. I still don't really know what Revo-Crute is, to be honest with you. Yeah, it's some sort of like athlete thing. I don't know what it is. I'm not an athlete anymore, happily retired. But yeah, you know, it was a lot of fun. I mean, you could tell that, you know, both teams wanted it, and you know, they branded it as, you know, this big rematch, because that's what it was. And I think everybody, you know, when this game was first, you know, reported and all of that, just people being excited about, you know, a rematch of a really good game from the last NCAA tournament. So, yeah, and you know, the you know, players had talked about it as well. Carter Knox, kind of in the buildup, was like, you know, talking about how much it hurt him to lose that game last year. And, you know, even after the game, Trevin Brazil had mentioned that, you know, it was one that he had personally circled for the season. So, yeah, you could definitely tell that it was built up in that way. And anyway, I thought it delivered. It was a lot of fun to watch that game.
Yeah, there was a little scuffle or something after the game. Of course, I didn't see it on TV, but you were there. What happened?
Oh, I don't know. I just kind of saw everybody start pushing, and I was like, whoa, yeah. Fight. It's kind of like every time I don't know. I'm a soccer player, so it was every time there's a soccer fight, it's just kind of guys like pushing, and that's kind of what it was. It wasn't any like punches thrown or anything, so it was like, soccer fight.
Yeah,
but I've been in those.
But Billy Richmond was in the middle of it, right?
Yeah.
As you could always expect.
Yeah. No, but yeah, that was that. And it was, you know, it's a highly emotional game. I you know, sometimes those things are going to happen. It's just kind of the way things go. And, you know, you get competitive people, you know, sometimes some stuff like that happens. I don't really look into it too much. But yeah, no, it's just, you know, kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah. No, it was definitely social media talk afterward that there was a scuffle, but good to hear that it wasn't, you know, too crazy.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It wasn't too crazy.
I think everybody's instinct whenever they hear scuffle is to imagine, like, punches being thrown and
stuff.
Yeah,
no, at least not that I saw.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it threw me off. You know, like you said, there were, you know, a lot of tension there because it was the rematch. It threw me off because the Razorback account posted, like, maybe an hour or so before the game, like, RevoCruit rematch threads. I said, was this, I was like, is this a typo? I was like, what is the RevoCruit? But it was the
RevoCruit. I'm looking this up. What is Revo?
After that, I started Googling. I was like, is this like actually the name of it? And sure enough, they had branded this game to be, be named that. It just threw me off.
RevoCruit, the nation's top visibility platform utilized by college athletes.
Awesome.
For athletes, centralize your information, build your brand, and increase your visibility and shareability by joining the largest network of players, coaches, and advocates.
That is our free reader today for RevoCruit.
This wasn't around when I was playing. Or at least I don't think they probably wanted to do anything with me either. I was a bad JUCO soccer player. So.
Well, it just threw me off that this game actually had like a brand name. I didn't know that was a thing until literally right before the game. Anthony, what did you think was the key for Arkansas second half? I mean, because obviously I forget, maybe it was like 50-37, I think, was after halftime the score.
I don't remember what the score was at halftime.
Arkansas was down 6 at halftime, so I think it was they outscored them 50-37 after the break. What changed there?
I think the biggest thing that you look at, or at least for me, was some defensive adjustments, and some of that came in the first half. They started picking up Christian Anderson or whoever the primary ball handler was going to be full court. And that led to some more turnovers, and Arkansas scored some points off turnovers that ended up being really crucial down the stretch. You know, so I think putting Texas Tech under immediate pressure and never really relenting from that, you know, was a big reason for that. Because I mean, you get Billy Richmond or Darius Acuff or whoever, you know, Malik Thomas, whoever, you know, guarding, you know, Christian Anderson or whoever's bringing the ball up the floor for Texas Tech, you know, the full length of the floor, you know, it's going to be, you know, tough to break that down. And like I said, it led to some turnovers, and Arkansas scored some points off turnovers. And in a close game like that, that obviously comes into play. And then they also stopped doubling JT Toppin in the post, which, you know, sometimes you see that and it's like, why are you stopping? Why would you stop doubling this guy when he's got, you know, 30-11 or whatever he finished with? But, you know, when you were doubling him, you're leaving somebody else open. And JT Toppin is he's an NBA player. He would have been drafted if he had stayed in the draft, or I don't think he ever tested the draft, but he would have been drafted had he gone in. And I'm sure he got paid handsomely to return to Texas Tech, and, you know, good for anybody who can do that. But, you know, so they stopped doubling him, which, you know, he's a good passer, so he was finding guys, you know, on the perimeter. Or, you know, Texas Tech is a really good passing team, and they had some really nice possessions in which they, you know, moved the ball around the perimeter and got some open looks. So, you know, you stop doubling him, and it's just one-on-one, and he doesn't have the passing options. And I thought that was really effective, even though he did, you know, like I said, ended up with 30-11 or whatever his final stat line was. So those are the big things that you know, especially defensively, that I noticed immediately was, you know, those two adjustments. And then offensively, I thought the connection that you saw between Darius Acuff and Trevin Brazil was huge, right? I mean, Darius Acuff finished with 20 points and 8 assists. 4 of those 8 assists were to Trevin Brazil. And Trevin Brazil had, you know, maybe one of the best games of his college career to this point. And, you know, he's been, you know, huge for Arkansas so far this season. Like, whenever Arkansas has success, it seems like he's having success, or whenever he's individually playing really well is when Arkansas is playing at its best. So, yeah, you could talk a lot about those two guys and their individual performances. I thought Carter Knox also had a lot of, you know, really nice moments. I think he finished with 20 points and 6 rebounds. You know, he kind of, I don't want to say get lost in the shuffle of this game, since, you know, so much of the talk has been about Brazil and Acuff, but, you know, I thought he was really good as well. And yeah, I think that's kind of, I just kind of started yapping, but yeah, so yeah. that's that.
Yeah. I sent a message in our work group chat, and then of course the thing I say, like the announcers say, like 5 seconds after I type it, so it looks like I'm just regurgitating what they said on TV. But it looked like Texas Tech, which, I mean, we alluded to it earlier with having only 6 guys who played, but they were just getting tired as the second half wore on.
The full court probably played into that some as well.
Yeah, but and I think that's why Calipari probably did a lot of it too, is just because he knew that, you know, Texas Tech, for what they had been playing pretty well. Like I told somebody this today, like, for considering what they had available Saturday, they needed Toppin and Anderson to give them like exactly what they gave them, and it still wasn't enough because they just didn't have that like real third piece step up and deliver. It felt to me like until that Texas Tech team gets guys healthy and maybe has somebody emerge and fill that third or fourth person role, like, it takes for them against teams like Arkansas, you know, other ranked teams, like, those two have to play really, really well because the team counts on them so much. And I just thought that Arkansas, got into those two's, like, legs finally, like, as the game wore on, because they couldn't just be Superman, you know, for the entire game. And also, I mean, I think it does help whenever Toppin definitely got to drag his feet a little bit. Probably didn't get called for a few walks, but I mean, he's phenomenal. He's such a good player.
He's an NBA player playing in college.
It was so impressive, some of his finishes around the rim, even if he did take like five steps on a couple of them. But I just thought that, honestly, that the legs started to play a factor. Arkansas is like not the deepest team in the world, but they can still come at you a lot more than they did last year, as far as like, they have a little bit more depth than they did with all the injuries and stuff, to where it feels like they have more depth than maybe they do comparative to, you know, other teams in the nation.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, you could tell that it was maybe getting to them a little bit, and JT Toppin and Christian Anderson played the full 40, so I do think that maybe played a little bit of a factor. And then they didn't get a lot from Luam Watts either. You know, that's a guy who you really need to
that's step who I up think should moments. Be the third option.
And I think he is. I think he's shown that at different times this season. But, I think he was, 3 of 10 from the field, if I remember correctly. So I don't know that Texas Tech is going to win a lot of games against quality competition when Luam Watts is not at his best. Or plays poorly. He doesn't need to be at JT Toppin or Christian Anderson levels to, for Texas Tech to win games. But, he needs to be better. He still finished with 5 assists. It's not like he was terrible by any means. But shooting the ball, shooting wise, it wasn't his best day. So there is that. And when your two guys are Christian Anderson and JT Toppin, you're going to have a chance in just about any game. But if Watts shoots the ball better, maybe we're sitting here talking about a different outcome. Or if Luke Bamgoy is healthy, maybe we're talking about a different outcome. So there are those different possibilities. But like we keep alluding to, I think Arkansas, utilized those or took advantage of those weaknesses. I don't want to say weaknesses. It feels like the wrong words. Like a circumstances. To its advantage. I mean, like we keep mentioning the press with, Acuff or Malik Thomas or whoever, or Billy Richmond, whoever's picking up full court, wearing guys out and, really kind of forcing Texas Tech to, be exhausted down the stretch, I guess. So, I definitely think that was a factor.
Yeah, and I thought it was also important, which I, just kind of going into this game, looking at Texas Tech's previous two losses, I mentioned this on the show on Friday, like to look at teams, what other teams did to beat them. And it seemed like kind of consistent with this took a different feel than I think that either the Purdue or Illinois losses did for Texas Tech, and the fact they scored the ball a lot better, which I think was a big part of just their duo being explosive. But I noticed in those other two losses, the other team really they won the foul battle, and Arkansas followed that same blueprint. And I think a lot of that is just with how Texas Tech plays. It's like kind of on their offensive end when they get in the half court, just kind of more methodical. It seemed but I thought that was crucial, that especially with Texas Tech having only really 6 guys that they played, like they had 2 guys with 4 fouls. So that's putting a lot of pressure on you. It was Toppin and Watts were the guys with 4 fouls. I thought that played a big role in the game, just the foul difference. I mean, you look at the final the stat line. And number one, Texas Tech didn't shoot very many free throws, but they were 3 of 10, 30% free throws.
Yeah, neither team really shot the ball at the free throw line well at all.
Yeah, but the difference is Arkansas got 26 shots, made 17 of them. So, you know, they outscored in free throws. That's 14 points right there. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was a big part of the game, too, was just the foul issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Arkansas gets to the line a decent amount. It's just kind of always been a big part of, you know, Arkansas's, or I guess John Calipari's, you know, system. They get to the line a decent amount, and not as much this season as compared to last season, if I remember correctly. But yeah, I mean, they're rank in the top third of free throw attempts per game. And then defensively, they're ranked number 12 in the country for free throw attempts against. So, you know, they don't foul a ton, which is, you know, sometimes you can look at that and say, why aren't you defending more aggressively? I don't think that's the case with this Arkansas team, at least not to this point. I think they're smart defensively, and I think they do a good job of, you know, keeping their guys in front of them and not, you know, getting into desperate, you know, reaching in attempts or things like that. So I do think that is a big factor, not just in this game for Arkansas, but going down the line. You know, I think there was a pretty decent free throw disparity in the Louisville game as well. And some of that is down to Louisville style of play. You know, you're not going to get as many free throws, you know, when your offense is more geared toward the 3-point line. You know, not to say that Louisville shouldn't have gotten more by any means, but because I did feel like there was a couple of times in which, you know, if I was Pat Kelsey, I would have been upset in that game. But yeah, I think that's, you know, Arkansas's defense, I think, has been really good at defending both physically or with physicality and without fouling. And I think that was a big factor, you know, not just in that game, but in other games as well.
Yeah. I also thought that another important thing was, I mean, we keep bringing up the lack of depth that Texas Tech had, their rotation, but Arkansas is also a team that when it's at its best, they're scoring a lot of fast break points. They get out and transition a lot. They did win the fast break, I guess, battle 18-4, which isn't like the... Hey, Arkansas has scored a lot more than 18 fast break points in a lot of games, but I thought that also contributed to just like why this might have been, you know, really one of those games where Arkansas could wear them down. Is just the way that Arkansas does play in general.
Yeah, play at pace,
once they were combining the press along with just kind of getting out and like you said, playing with pace, I just thought that Texas Tech, it didn't really have the horses to keep up with them whenever it got, like, you could just feel that it was about to break at some point, at least I thought. So they had a few, you know, answers whenever Arkansas made that surge kind of middle of the second half. I think Arkansas took the lead maybe or at least tied it on a Brazil three or something like that. And then Texas Tech had a little spurt where you felt like they were just kind of holding on to keep it. And then finally the dam kind of burst. I just think Arkansas is a team this year that when things are going the best for them, they're getting out fast break. And that's got to be, I would think, at the top of every other team's scouting report. It's like, don't let these guys get out there.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you have, you know, two guys who are more than likely going to be in the NBA next season with Darius Acuff and Malik Thomas, you know, kind of being those lead guards. And, you know, DJ Wagner as well can play at pace. You know, but when you think of this Arkansas team, you think about, you know, those two guys and how they can break out in the fast break and everything like that. And, you know, this Arkansas team likes to play fast. It doesn't necessarily love to play in the half court. So they like to get out in transition. They like to get out of the fast break. I mean, adjusted tempo, they're number 66 in the country. And their average possession length on the offensive end is 15.3 seconds. So they're trying to play fast, right? So, you know, they're not wanting, you know, opposing teams to get their defenses set. And, you know, that I felt was, you know, like we keep mentioning, you know, I thought that was a big part of that game, you know, especially when they, yeah, got out in the fast break.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned him earlier. I think obviously, like, everybody's kind of talked at length early in the season about Carter Knox, how his performances just weren't what we expected from him. I mean, he's had some good flashes in some of those early non-conference games, but it was really the big games that it was like, you know, kind of where is he? Felt like Saturday was finally that game that just the switch kind of flipped again. Obviously, time will tell later performances. But like you said, I mean, he came up big, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 2 blocks. You know, whenever this team gets that version of Carter Knox, How does it change things, do you think, just for the group as a whole?
Oh, I think it's huge. I mean, you know, he's a guy who could have been drafted last year. You know, he probably would have been a second round guy. So he comes back to school and he has high expectations. And John Calipari spoke about it in the postgame press conference that, you know, he feels like maybe those external expectations and maybe even, you know, personal expectations for himself have maybe worn him down a little bit or weighed him down a little bit. And I think you definitely saw him, you know, play like he's capable of playing, you know, in this Texas Tech game. You know, what he adds, I mean, he's a versatile scorer. He can score on all three levels. And, you know, we know what he can do on the defensive end as well. You know, he's an NBA level athlete. And I think he's, you know, only added to that in the offseason. I think he looks more physically ready this year than he did last year, which is always going to happen when you have a freshman going to become a sophomore, but still. And, you know, he was a huge part of this game. Not to, I know people keep talking about, you know, Brazil and Acuff and, you know, how well they played, but I feel like Carter Knox was right there with them and playing maybe not quite as well, but maybe just like one notch below. But yeah, he was phenomenal.
He was the most efficient one of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
8 of 11.
Mm-hmm. And when he's efficient like that, if he's hitting shots and, you know, he's, you know, gaining confidence, he's kind of a, you know, he's a confidence player sometimes. And, you know, when he hits that first shot, you can see that it's okay. It's going to be a night for Carter Knox. And, you know, when he's playing, you know, that well, it just raises the ceiling for Arkansas a lot more, I think. Yeah. So.
And it makes me just wonder, like, what's crazy about that is that you kind of got that performance. It's like you need the third for Arkansas because, Texas Tech would have taken Malik Thomas's stat line if they had heard it before the game 10 mm-hmm. times out of 10 that, you know, he was 2 of 8 from the field, 8 points. Like, but if they get Carter playing like that and Malik Thomas is playing how he's played, I would just think that's really, really a scary thing for other teams.
Yeah, especially if you can also get DJ Wagner, you know, being more involved on the offensive end. I still think that they're kind of, you know, working on, you know, how to, you know, get the best out of him in a more off-ball role. But yeah, if you get, you know, all of those guys clicking, I think the ceiling for this team is very high. And I think you've seen that kind of throughout the season when, you know, those guys will play well in different spots, you know, so when, you know, if and when they all do it together, and not everybody's going to put up 20 points and 6 rebounds and 2 blocks like Carter Knox did the other night, because, you know, the ball has to move and, you know, teams are going to key in on guys who are playing well. And it's just kind of the way it goes. But I think the ceiling raises, you know, exponentially if you can get all those guys, I guess, kind of all playing well at the same time.
Real quick before we go to a break, it seemed through the TV like it, but was it Bud Walton South? Or I guess they used to call it Barnhill South, but...
That was Reunion Arena.
Oh, well, did it feel like a Bud Walton South and American Airlines Center?
A little bit, yeah. You could definitely tell that it was a more Arkansas-friendly crowd than a Texas Tech-friendly crowd, but, you know, there was a, you know, a good chunk of Texas Tech fans there, too, that made it feel like a good neutral site game. And, you know, I'll always be in favor of playing games like this on campus, just because I think, you know, on-campus environments or NCAA tournament aside, on-campus environments are always going to be better. And some conference tournaments. I think there are some conference tournaments where, you know, the environment is really good. You look at the Big East tournament at Madison Square Garden, or, you know, the Missouri Valley tournament up there in St. Louis is an awesome event that I encourage everybody to go to. But I felt like it was certainly an Arkansas friendly crowd, and I think what you saw on TV kind of resembled
that. It got really loud, at least on the broadcast, the sequence where you had the Trevin Brazil 3, then the Billy Richmond steal that ends in a Darius Acuff and one. That was kind of the moment that I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is definitely a pro-Arkansas crowd.
I think that was the loudest that it got, was that sequence there. And I think that was part of, I think it was 19 straight points that Acuff or Brazil scored,
mm-hmm.
which was, I mean, that's kind of why everybody's like, okay, you know, these are the guys, and they just won SEC player and freshman of the week respectively. So yeah, it was fun. It was a fun game to go to, fun game to cover.
Yeah, it made me wish I was down there. It was such a, on TV, it just seemed electric. So, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the AP poll that dropped today. Anthony is a voter in it, so we'll have fun talking about that.
Stay out of my mentions. I'm just kidding.
But first, a word from our sponsor.
Kindle King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kindle King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back in. Want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. Serving its community since 1971, Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. Looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas? Looking for skilled craftsmanship? Choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or at bentonvilleglass.com. Anthony mentioned it before we went to the break. You vote in the AP poll. Arkansas checked in today at 14. Thoughts are just where they landed.
Fair.
Yeah.
I had them 13, I think. Yes. Yeah. I had Arkansas at 13. The only team ranked above Arkansas that I have Arkansas ahead of is Louisville, just because, you know, respecting the head to head for now, even though, you know, head to head, and especially in basketball, I think it's a bigger deal in football. But I think it, you know, for now, I'm going to respect the head-to-head, even though Louisville does have a better record, you know, the 9-1 versus the 8-2. But Arkansas, I thought, played very well against Louisville. Played better than Louisville in that game. And, you know, it's splitting hairs, I think, at this stage.
And also at this point in the season,
and like, Arkansas had the home court, so I understand why people still have Louisville ahead of Arkansas. And
yeah,
Louisville's metrics are better than Arkansas's, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I get it's just so weird this time of year too, though, because you're comparing those two, and you have the head to head. But it's like Arkansas's played like Duke and Michigan State. Louisville has good wins over, you know, say what you want about Kentucky, I still say that's a good win to have. Indiana, it's like they haven't really faced, I think, as tough of a test as Arkansas, but they've handled business every other time. So it's really hard to compare teams at this point.
Yeah, beat Cincinnati. Cincinnati stinks, but, you know, still a power conference team. And yeah, it's splitting hairs. And, you know, like I said, I think head to head matters more in football than it does in basketball. But for now, I have Arkansas ahead of Louisville, just on that basis.
Anything that surprised you with the poll? Just anybody too high, too low?
No, not really. I've kind of been talking about this with, you know, different friends and people. There's like 15 good teams, and then the rest is just kind of like picking out of a hat. You know, once you get past the top 20, 21 teams, like those last few spots filling this out, it's like, okay, which team do I want to pick that's not really been great?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got Georgia at 22. Georgia's, you know, looked really good. Metrics are great. 9-1, everything looks really good, but Georgia has not really played a ton of teams. Like Georgia just beat Cincinnati, but like I said, I think Cincinnati stinks.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at Georgia's other, Cincinnati is Georgia's best win per KenPom. Its next best win is Xavier, which is 85 at KenPom. And Xavier's looked a lot better in recent games than it did to start the season, but still 85 in KenPom, and lost to a Clemson team that I'm not sure if I'm in or out on, because Clemson, choked away a 22-point lead against BYU and has also lost to a Georgetown team that we have since discovered stinks. So it's a little up in the air. And yeah, those are the only three games that Georgia has played against top 100 competition. But I mean, they're beating the crap out of everybody they're playing, except for Xavier, the 1 by 1 point on a neutral. And that's really the only close game they've had. Well, Georgia Tech was a 5-point game. That's a rivalry game, so you kind of throw a lot of stuff out the window, but and all that. But yeah, so you get to like the bottom, and it kind of gets a little bit tough. You know, I kept Florida in my poll just because Florida's been really competitive in a lot of games, but still has, you know, I think a bad loss to TCU. I'm not in on that TCU team at all right now. And like St. John's hasn't looked great. Auburn has looked good at times, but then also has looked awful at times. Like it's tough once you get to the lower end of the top 25. But I wasn't necessarily surprised by anything, no.
Yeah. Somebody asked me earlier today, like this was before the poll dropped, they said, what did I think Arkansas would be? And I said, I think the highest, very highest they could be is 11. And I said, I feel like 14 is kind of I didn't think they'd drop below 14, and there they were at 14. So I kind of was the same boat. I was like, this feels like, I mean, you can make arguments this time of year to have anybody over anybody. But I think it does stand out. Vanderbilt's at 13, which Vanderbilt's been really good this year. Like if anybody who watches them play knows that they're good. I get it that they haven't played this exact
schedule.
They've
got four top 100 wins.
Yeah, but I know, but I'm just saying, I know they haven't played like the marquee, like really.
Yes,
they haven't played the elite team, but if you watch them, they pass like very much the eye
test. They're beating the crap out of everybody.
Yeah. But
like their closest game was a scare on a neutral against Western Kentucky. Western Kentucky's not great, but I mean, if they scored 96 points on St. Mary's, and I know St. Mary's just lost to Boise State last night. But 96 points is the most Randy Bennett has ever allowed in regulation in his career.
Mm-hmm.
So that says something to me. It speaks to me. Well, this Vanderbilt team is special.
Yeah. That being said, I wanted to bring this up because it's obviously the SEC is not what it was last year. I mean, last year was – I think that if you're like, an SEC basketball fan, if those exist, that just love the SEC, other than Greg Sankey. But, you know, like you kind of probably wanted to see you had to know last year was a one in a million. Like, this was just such a good year for the league. I think you probably wanted to see the SEC just, you knew they'd take a step back, but you didn't want to see them, like, as much as they have in my, like, it just, whatever Arkansas and Vanderbilt.
A lot of these teams stink.
Being 13 and 14 as, you know, kind of spearheading the league right now. I mean, Arkansas sitting at 14 does look like, you know, a real SEC contender this year, and it's not necessarily, that's not like being debated right now. That between them, Vanderbilt, you could probably throw Alabama in there too, still for sure.
I think you can still have Florida. I think Florida is going to get things turned around. I still believe in that roster, but not to interrupt.
Oh no, you're good. I was just going to ask but that wasn't the perception of Arkansas at the point of the Duke loss. I mean, I think people still thought they were going to be good, but like they've really taken the next step since then with the win over obviously Louisville and now Texas Tech. What do you think has changed since that Duke loss that's got Arkansas to where it's obviously the wins helped change perception? But when you just look at what has happened with the team itself, what's changed to kind of get them in this position?
Yeah, the wins, the performances, I think have been really good, especially when you beat two ranked teams, right? You beat Louisville, which I think was top 10 at the time, was number 6 at the time. And then you beat Texas Tech, which was also ranked at the time. And, you know, there's that. So and then you take care of business against the other teams you've played as well. So I think that's kind of all you really, I guess, need to see if you're a voter, I guess. I don't know. But, I mean, I am a voter, but everybody does it differently. But I think the performances especially have been the most telling thing to me because, I mean, you can win a game in, you know, fluky ways and everything like that. I mean, yeah, but I think the performances have been a lot better. I think defensively Arkansas has looked better even though you give up, 80 points to Louisville and you give up 86 to Texas Tech. I still think that there were moments, you know, like we mentioned, the defensive adjustments in the last segment that – you know, show that they, you know, can compete, you know, against these upper level teams and, you know, make the crucial stops at the crucial times. And I think those are big factors for those, you know, those things.
I personally think something that's changed, which it honestly started in the Duke game, in my opinion. I just think Malik Ewan is giving them a lot more right now too. It stood out to me Saturday, you know, that he's just got a, like, it feels to me like a very,
he's embracing
the
physicality a lot more, and
What do you see his role being on the team throughout the year?
That's a good question. You know, I think you know he adds something different than what Nick Pringle brings, which is good. You want versatility in your five man spot. You know, he's much, I think, more comfortable with the ball in his hands. I think he's a better passer. Not to knock Nick Pringle, and that's not what I'm trying to do, because I think he's a good passer and everything like that as well. But I think, you know, he can do a lot more things. And when he's, you know, embracing the physicality like I think he has these past few games, I just think that adds, you know, a different element that you can do. I mean, he was phenomenal against Louisville, I thought. And I thought he was good again against Texas Tech. So I think if you can, you know, keep him playing at those levels, and like John Calipari said, like he did last season at Florida State, I think that raises the ceiling a lot. You know, does he slide into the starting lineup? I'm not sure. You know, starters at, you know, I don't really think it matters that much. I think everybody in that 8-man rotation is going to be playing starter level minutes. So, you know, I think, you know, being in the starting five is not necessarily a huge deal, I guess, especially when you're going to be playing a lot of minutes anyway. So I think his role is going to be kind of that secondary big man who, you know, certainly brings something different than what Nick Pringle does, and is somebody who is probably going to be in the game when you need, you know, more ball movement, I think, and, you know, yeah, just like a different option down low.
Yeah, his energy on the offensive glass, like, I think coming from Florida State, we knew that was like kind of on the Malik Ewan card as far as he's a good offensive rebounder, but we just didn't see it for a few games. We didn't see just much of that whole energy package in general. I feel like his offensive rebounding
has been big. Yeah.
It's been really big for the team. He had that one shot against Texas Tech that was like fading away.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that he showed against Texas Tech a lot of the skill that we maybe heard about and just hadn't quite seen yet, at least offensively.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think that's why you bring him in, right? You know, there was a time early in the season where, you know, you kind of question what is his role, how do you get the best out of him? And there was a time where, you know, I was kind of flummoxed by it because I was trying to figure it out as well. You know, is his best role, would it be better for him if Arkansas initiated the offense through him, but would that be the best thing for Arkansas? And I didn't think that kind of connected. And I don't think that has really changed. I don't think Arkansas is really initiating the offense through Malik Ewan at this point in time when he's on the floor, but I think he's being more involved in the offense than what he was. And he's really embraced the physicality, like we said earlier, that you know he needs to have as a guy who's going to be playing a lot in the paint and playing a lot against, you know, power conference level big men. And I think that's been a big reason that you've seen, you know, this I guess kind of change in performances.
Yeah, I'm personally going to be watching between the big men of Arkansas. Like, I don't think that you see, at least the rest of the way off the top of my head, I know Florida has
Florida has potentially the best front court in the country.
Yeah, yeah. They're kind
Ruben
of a standalone.
Ruben Chinyelu, Alex Condon, Tommy Haug, Micah Hanglogden.
But as far as just like specific players, like Boozer and JT Toppin are right up there among, you know, the best in the nation. So I think that for Arkansas, it is probably a good sign for your front court. That I know they got talked about a lot, especially after the Duke game. But at least they're going to go into the rest of the year. They've seen some of the best.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely a big positive. Definitely a big positive. And, you know, when you're, and not to, you know, downplay a lot of these other teams' big men, like, you know, Mark Mitchell at Missouri is really, really good. Federico is in the SEC now after, you know, the 6 offensive rebounds he got in the NCAA tournament against Arkansas last season when he was at Texas Tech. You know, he's at A&M now. So, you know, they're still going to see, you know, quality big men, but I think. You know, seeing those two guys and Boozer and Toppin, I think, you know, that's why you play them. That's why you want to see those guys in the non-conference, so you're prepared for, you know, the similar level players once you get into conference play. And I think it's definitely going to be a nice thing to have in your back pocket once you get into SEC play for sure.
Yeah, we'll end on this. Quick turnaround for Arkansas with another game tomorrow, 8 p.m., one of the worst tip-off times against Queens.
I can think of one worse, 9 p.m.
At Vanderbilt last year.
That was awful.
Yeah, but what do you want to see from the team tomorrow in that late, terrible tip-off time?
I think you're going to need to see your three-point defense. You know, Queens comes in, Chris Ashby, you know, preseason ASUN player of the year. He's a ton of fun to watch. Great little guard. You know, he can light it up. He's really good. You know, Queens, you know, hasn't played super well against power conference competition, but you know, you don't want to get caught overlooking this game by any means. You know, so there is that. You know, I think Queens preseason ASUN favorite in the coaches poll, not in the media poll, but you know, they're a team that can they can play pretty decent.
I
think the big thing that you want to see is defending the 3-point line. Sorry to interrupt, but
no, you're good.
You know, defending the 3-point line, Queens is a really good 3-point shooting team. Like I mentioned, Chris Ashby, Nasir Mann, couldn't think of his name. He's a 40% 3-point shooter, not a 40-point scorer. That would be quite something. But I think you want to defend the perimeter, you know, really well. Queens is not a very big team, so you're going to have the size advantage. So I think you want to, you know, get the ball inside to Nick Pringle, Malik Ewan, you know, those guys inside for easy points. Because I mean, Queens doesn't have a lot of size. I think, you know, Gus Larson is, I think they're only 6'10 guy, at least off the top of my head. But I think, you know, the 3-point defense is going to be a big thing for Arkansas in this game. And, you know, it's, you know, Queens is not a team that you should lose to. And I don't think anybody is going to expect them to lose this game. But I think that is the area that you definitely need to, you know, be prepared to defend on is the 3-point line. Because, I mean, Queens has, you know, like we said, Nasir Mann shoots over 40% from three. Now I've got Queens pulled up on here. You know, Mabin Jabriel's 48% from three on not the highest volume, but still decent volume. Carson Schwieger is 42% from three. So they've got guys who can shoot, you know, not just Chris Ashby, who is, like I mentioned earlier, a ton of fun to watch. Great player. But yeah, defend the 3-point line, I think, is the biggest thing that I notice, at least just, you know, watching Queens.
Yeah, I mean, we already know from Winthrop what happens if a team comes in and just shoots the heck out of the ball. It can turn into a game. And it does give me the vibe of, like, Queens is not, like, an... There's categories to this as far as, like, these mid-majors. There's some that are just really, really bad. And Queens is not one of those.
No.
It's a decent game that coming off of this quick of a turnaround after an emotional win over Texas Tech, and then you have another big game coming up.
It does give me
the vibes of, like, maybe could be a sluggish type of win where you don't look your best. But it, like you said, is a team that Arkansas should beat.
Yeah, Queens defensively is also not good, like, at all.
Yeah.
Queens is a very bad defensive team. At least it has been throughout the non-conference, in which, you know, obviously it's playing some bye games, you know, Villanova, Wake Forest, Virginia, you know, some decent teams in there. So maybe it's a little skewed by that, but defensively Queens has just not been good. And yeah, like I said, I think you can take advantage of your size advantage inside, you know, dump the ball down low, and then, you know, maybe you can get hot from the 3-point line as well. They don't defend the 3-point line well either, so... You know, it's a game that you can't look over it just because they do have guys who can hurt you in a lot of different ways. But yeah, I think defend the 3-point line, get the ball inside. Those are the Anthony keys to the game.
Thanks for the keys to the game, Anthony. Well, I want to thank you for listening in today. We'll be back with another show tomorrow. But until then, you can visit our website at wholehogsports.com for all the latest Razorback news and analysis. Have a great day, everyone.